I'm going to talk about the end of the age today, and that could make about a dozen sermons, I would imagine. But what we're going to do, we're going to hit the highlights and go through it as a reminder of what we're likely to face very soon, or at least it looks that way to most of us. If you remember, when the Israelites demanded a king, God warned them in 1 Samuel 8, if you want to go there. He warned them in verse 16. He said, you know, if you choose a king, he will take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your animals and put them to his work. In other words, you're going to be taxed and taxed heavy. I think most of us can relate to that. He will take a tenth part of your sheep, and you shall be his servants. And again, we can relate to that, only we wish they would stop at 10%. You know? It gets to be much more than that today. And verse 18, you shall cry out in that day because of your king, which you have chosen, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. It's your choice. You live with it, is the way we would probably convey that message today. It's your choice. Live with it. Okay, I'd like to go to Isaiah 9. I'll just read a little bit here in Isaiah 9. And verse 19, through the wrath of the Lord of hosts is the land darkened, and the people shall be as fuel for the fire, or of the fire. No man shall spare his brother. Dropping down to verse 21, Ephraim, and they together shall be against Judah. For all this, God's anger is not turned away. For all of this. And if we understand history, we know that the nation Israel, which the main two tribes was Ephraim and Manasseh, you know, they made up the Israelite nation in Samaria. And they were constantly at war with Judah. And sometimes the different tribes were at war with each other. At one time, all the tribes ganged up on Benjamin, and they almost eliminated Benjamin as one of the 12 tribes. And then they had to improvise a little bit and hasten and figure out a way to get around the oath that they had made and supply wives for the few men that were left in Benjamin so that the tribe would continue to exist. So, you know, that's our history. Man is always taught for predominance, to rule, you know, to dominate. We see it everywhere, even in our society. People are working hard, you know, to get to the top, to dominate others. So let's go down to Isaiah 10 now. Isaiah 10. And we'll start in verse 1. It says, woe unto them that decree unrighteous decrees and that write grievousness which they have prescribed. You know, that's another thing we see in our government today. More and more rules and demands from the government. This is what you can do. This is what you can't do. And this is how you can use your own property. And this is what you can't do with it. We see it over and over. Verse 2, to turn aside the needy from judgment, to take away the right from the poor of my people, that widows may be their prey, and they may rob the fatherless. Let's drop down to verse 4 there, the middle of the verse. for all this, his anger, that is, God's anger, is not turned away. In verse 5, O Assyrian, the rod of my anger, who are the Assyrians? Assyria was one of the, I guess, was the most powerful nation on earth at their peak. They ruled an area which included Samaria. They had taken over Samaria, which means the 10 so-called lost tribes of Israel. They ruled them. They ruled Lebanon. They ruled what we know as Syria today. Syria and Assyria are two different things entirely. But Assyria ruled that area, and their empire was like a crescent. It goes up the east end of the Mediterranean Sea, up to north to Syria and around. It included a good part of what we know as Iraq today, a little bit of Turkey. It even goes over to the Persian Gulf. They ruled a little bit of what is today India. That's how big their empire was. And if you were in the whirlwind a long time ago, you probably understand that the Assyrian people actually are the roots of the German people. They migrated back westward and end up establishing the nation that we know as Germany today. Now, Israel was a part of that empire. They were captives in that empire. So they migrated with Assyria to the west to form the nation Germany and other nations around that area as well, you know, Ireland, England, and so forth. But Israel was scattered among the people, and we were basically, Israel was a part of the Assyrian Empire and a part of the German nation. And going down to verse 5 here, where we are in Isaiah 10, verse 5, O Assyrian, the rod of my anger, the staff in their hand, the staff in their hand is my indignation. In other words, they're doing my work. I sent them to do what they're doing. I will send him against the hypocritical nation. Against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge to take the spoil, to take the prey, and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. Now, God's wrath is basically against Israel, because God had a special purpose for Israel from the very beginning, you know, including all 12 tribes before they were separated into Israel and Judah as two different nations. But that's where God's wrath is directed, because he intended that Israel lead the world to righteousness. Have we failed? No, we failed miserably. Verse 7, howbeit he meaneth not so. In other words, it wasn't in the king of Assyria's mind to do God's work. He didn't mean to do that. You know, that was not in his mind at all. It says, neither does his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy and to cut off nations, not a few. He was certainly not a godly man in any stretch of the imagination, but he was doing God's will because God sent him to do it. Verse 8, for he says, you know, he does bragging about how powerful he is. He said, are not my princes altogether kings? Is not Calno as Carmex? Well, Calno had been taken from Nimrod in Babylon and become a part of that Assyrian Empire. So he's saying, you know, these cities that I captured, they're just like the cities that have always been in this nation. I rule them. with a rod of iron. I do what I want to with them. And he goes on and he mentions others. Is not Hamath as Arphad? Well, Hamath was the one of the leading cities in Syria, but Arphad had been captured and adopted into, you know, the Assyrian Empire. He says, is not Samaria as Damascus? Well, we know Damascus was a part of his empire, and Samaria was basically the 10 tribes of Israel. He said, I rule them just like I rule my own people. He's bragging a little bit here. Verse 10. As my hand hath felled the kingdoms of idols, and whose graven images did excel them of Jerusalem and of Samaria, shall I not, as I have done unto Samaria and her idols, so do to Jerusalem and her idols? Well, Jerusalem was still in existence. They had not yet been taken over, but he's saying, I will take them over just like I took over the 10 tribes. Verse 12, wherefore it shall come to pass that when the Lord has performed his whole work upon Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, I will punish the fruit of the stout heart of the king of Assyria and the glory of his high looks. Okay, God made a determination. He's going to use Assyria to do his will, and then he's going to punish Assyria because of their pride and their evil ways. At the beginning of World War II, you remember Germany had for a long time been, I guess you'd say, angry at the United States because of what we did to them in World War I. At the end of World War I, when we were the victors, we demanded that the Germans pay a good part of the bill for that war. And they were paying and paying and paying to the United States, and they just bristled under that burden that they had. So Hitler, as the leader of Germany then, naturally was an enemy of the United States, and he wanted more than anything else to destroy the United States of America. And when the war started, Herbert Armstrong looked at the history at that time, knowing that Assyria, same people, or the German people, had been the rod of God's anger. Herbert Louis Armstrong made the assumption, and it was an assumption, that Assyria would always be the major rod of God's anger. That was not true. That is not true. And I can prove it. When the Israelites came out of Egypt and went into the land of promise, they were told by God to wipe out the various tribes. I'll call them tribes, or the Bible speaks about them as nations. But there were small nations in that area. And God said, wipe them out. Kill them all. And they didn't, of course. They refused. They made agreements with some of the people. And at various times, here are some of the people that God used as the rod of his anger, not just the Germans or the Assyrians. Some of those people were the Amalekites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Edomites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, Moabites, Perizzites, the Philistines. They were all used at one time or another as the rod of God's anger because Israel didn't do what God told them to do. Then God used those very people to fight against Israel and, you know, bring hardships to wake Israel up, as a matter of fact. So it's a mistake to think that the Assyrians or the Germans are the only ones that's ever been the rod of God's anger. What about Babylon? Babylon is the nation that later on took over Jerusalem and carried them in captivity to Babylon. So at that time, the Babylonians were the rod of God's anger. The king of Assyria didn't get to fulfill his wish. You know, he said, I'm going to take over Jerusalem just like I took over Samaria. God wouldn't let him do that. But the Babylonians came along some 40 years later and did take over Judah. Let's go to Daniel 11. Daniel 11. And verse 40. We've heard a lot about the king of the north and king of the south, and what I've been talking about so far is kind of an introduction to get into the, you know, the last days. But in Daniel 11, verse 40, at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind. He shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. Now, who is the king of the south? And who is the king of the north? And if we're ever to understand end time prophecy, we have to understand the three major powers on earth at the end time. There are three major powers, and only three. Now, each one of those powers includes a number of nations. It's, you know, like the Allies and the Axis during World War II. But that they're spoken of in the Bible as one power. One of those is the king of the south. One of those is the king of the north, and there's another one that's not mentioned very much, but it's Gog and Magog in the far northeast from Jerusalem. So, you know, Mr. Armstrong was looking at prophecy from the world that he saw in the early 40s. But that's nothing like the world that we have today. Where does the United States fit in with those world powers? You know, we have to be included in one of those three world powers. The United States by itself, I mean, anybody with a common sense can see that we can't do very much by ourselves. If we're going to take any major operation, we have to have allies. So we're going to be allied with one of those three powers. You think the United States is going to be allied with Gog and Magog way up in the northeast, which is probably Russia, China, Mongolia, and who knows? It mentions the islands along with that combination of nations. So some of those islands over there in the Philippines, you know, there's a large Muslim contingency in those islands and that area, Indonesia, and God mentions the islands along with that major force in the world at the end time. I don't think the United States, in any stretch of the imagination, is ever going to be allied with that group. Well, that leaves the king of the south and the king of the north. And who are they? Alexander the Great took over he took over the known world, basically. And when he died, he had four generals that divided up his kingdom. And two of those generals became the major force in the world. And the other two, you know, they were kind of allied with the two most powerful, okay. And the two most powerful was the king of the north, which it ended up being Syria, not Assyria. even though it's in the same area that Assyria once controlled. It's a different nation. It's a different people. The Assyrians are gone. It's a different people in that area now. It's Syria. And the king of the south is Egypt. It's important to know. I wish I'd looked it up and wrote it down, but I didn't. But there is a statement in the Bible that says Egypt will never, ever have a native ruler again. And this goes back years and years and years ago. And there has not been an Egyptian ruling Egypt in our lifetime. There hasn't been. Egypt is ruled by Arabs. They've been ruled by Arabs. And they're the king of the south. So, you know, that kind of gives you a better picture of what's going on today. The king of the south is Egypt, which is ruled by Arabs. It's the Arab nations. And they're Muslim, you know, as far as religion goes. The king of the north, well, that is Western Europe. It has to be Germany. But again, where do we fit in? Aren't we friends now of Germany? They're not our enemies. They're not starting a war with the United States. I don't buy the idea that the Germans are going to take over the Israelite nations. We're allied with them. We've been living with them since ancient history. We're part of them. I've got a German name. I'm part German. But I know in my own mind I'm part Israelite too. You see? See what happened? We're living in Assyria for years and years and years. They're mixed out. The Israelites took wives from the Assyrians. The Assyrians took wives from the Israelites. And we're mixed out. We're basically a part of the same people. So I do not believe that Germany is going to take over the Western world. I'm not telling you what you have to believe. I'm not telling you doctrine from the Bible. I'm telling you what I believe right now. But it all makes sense to me, at least. Let's go on in verse 41 where we were here. In Daniel 11. He shall enter also into the glorious land. This is the king of the north. Many countries shall be overthrown. But these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. Where are those people today? They're in the nation that we call Jordan. Jordan has been a friend to the United States. The king of Jordan married a lady from the United States. She's a movie star. She is the queen of Jordan. She's an American. Verse 42, and he stretched forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. The land of Egypt shall not escape. Remember, just recently, the Muslim Brotherhood took over Egypt. They may do it again because it's mostly Arab, mostly Muslims in Egypt, even though the leaders are all Arab. He shall have power over the treasuries of gold and of silver and over the precious things of Egypt. The Egyptian military is, they're really our friends. You know, they threw out the Muslim Brotherhood and took over the country. The Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. Well, we know what's going on in Libya right now. It's chaos, and they control vast amounts of oil that used to be used. Well, let's put it this way. They used to profit the Western world and the United States. Right now, the jihadists control it. Verse 44. But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble them. Now, who's that? Out of the east and the north? Remember, Gog and Magog, north and east of Jerusalem. That's that third power. So the king of the north has finally had enough of the Arabs, the king of the south, and we will go to war. We'll have to go to war. There is no doubt about it. I mean, we will have to fight them or submit and let them chop our heads off or pledge our allegiance to Allah, their God. That'll be the choice we'll have. We'll have to fight them. I can make a case that Donald Trump will probably win this election because he's more likely to go to war early, but that doesn't exactly hold true because we will be forced to go to war. And if Hillary Clinton is elected president, she may hold off longer until we're weaker and weaker and weaker and finally forced to go to war, but we will go to war. There is no question about it whatsoever. We will either go to war or we will all die or turn Muslim. We have to. It's coming. So I don't know who's going to win this election. I know God's going to carry out his plan no matter who wins it. Let's see. Tidings out of the east, verse 44, tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him, and he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly make away many. And he shall plant the tabernacle of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. King of the North. That is the Western world, including Israel. None shall help him. That is, as a nation, as a government. It doesn't mean every individual in that group. Let's go down to Daniel 12. Daniel 12, verse 1. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which stands for the children of your people, thy people. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time, thy people shall be delivered. So even though I believe that we're allied with the king of the north, and the king of the north will be wiped out, if you think about it, every governmental system on this earth will eventually be wiped out. There will be one governmental system left, and that will be the government of God. So, you know, it's no big thing that the Western world or the king of the north will come to an end. But there are people in that system that God will send the great archangel Michael to save them out of that nation. But it's going to be a time worse than anything we've ever seen. And I remember when I first came into the church, I started reading some of the things the Germans did during World War II. And, you know, it's just sickening. It literally makes you sick, the things that they did, the experiments that they did on some of their prisoners. And I won't go into it. I don't want everybody to go home sick today. But I think you understand and know what happened there. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life and some to shame and everlasting contempt. You know, it's going on far into the future from that time. They that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever and ever. You know, to put this in context with what's going on in the world today, This very week, the German government released a 60-page memo entitled Concept for Civil Defense, citing multiple terrorist attacks, cybercrime, a host of other threats. The report states that Germans should prepare for an event that could threaten our existence. This is the German government today, this week, could threaten our existence. And the report proposes a number of mandatory countermeasures, including that Germans should stockpile food and water. This week. I don't think we can overstress what is happening and how serious it really is. Remember during the Great Depression, was nothing like World War II, not even near as bad, but even then people were jumping out of high buildings committing suicide when they woke up one morning and the stock market had crashed and they were buying on margin and they lost everything that they had and ended up in debt and saw no way out. And they just committed suicide. Lots of them. So something much, much worse is coming. Recently, the U.S. government, and I bet not many of you know this, the U.S. government fined a French bank $9 billion. That's right, not million, billion. $9 billion. And the French bank didn't, you know, they're a French organization. They didn't break any French laws. That's how much power the United States has had over countries of the world. And when they don't do what they're told to do, they get crushed. The world is fed up with it. Other countries are making a mad rush to try to devise a system whereby they can do their transactions, you know, I'll say face-to-face. They don't have to go through the U.S. banking system. Everything today has to go through the U.S. banking system, almost everything. There are different developments that are underway and pretty far along, by the way. They're developing a blockchain technology, they call it, that will enable them to trade directly with each other, you know, eliminate the United States entirely. Another mechanism that will help them do the same thing is called utility settlement coin. But we, the United States, are rapidly being ruled out. You know, we have ruled the world financially ever since World War I, as a matter of fact. And it got even more dominant after World War II. But the nations are standing up, and I think under God's inspiration, and they're going to fight back, and they're going to fight back hard. And you're going to wake up some morning, and you find out your bank is closed, and maybe you'll get some of your money, maybe you won't. They say that $100,000 is guaranteed by the feds. Don't believe it. They don't have it. They don't have it. All they can do is print it, and the more they print, the less it's worth. That's the way it is. Let's go to Revelation 6. I'm going to skip through Revelation 6 here. Well, I'll read quite a few verses, but I'll skip through the first part of it at least. Talks about the four horsemen here, Revelation 6, verse 1. It says, the Lamb opened one of the seals. And verse 2, behold, a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow. The crown a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. If you know history, as the Worldwide Church of God taught it, you know that that's been going on ever since the Catholic Church was instituted. This conquering is they deceived the people into adopting a false religion. Verse 3, and when he'd opened the second seal, verse 4, another horse that was red, and power was given to him to sit thereon to take peace from the earth, that they should kill one another. War, you know, we've had wars going down through the ages. This is not necessarily, this part of it is not end time prophecy. This has been going on for hundreds of years. Verse 5, when he had opened the third seal, there was a black horse. He that sat on them had a pair of balances in his hand. And verse 6, it says, a measure of wheat for a penny and 3 measures of barley for a penny. Talking about famine that would come. That probably will be at the end time. No doubt will be at the end time, but it's happened before throughout history. Verse 7, when he opened the fourth seal, then verse 8, the pale horse, his name set on him was death, and hell followed with him. Power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth to kill with the sword and with hunger and with death and with the beast of the earth. This is getting closer now to the end time prophecy. There will be all at the same time. There will be war, famine, death, disease, epidemics of all kinds. And verse 9, he that opened the fifth seal, of course, most of you know the story there. That's those that have already died in service to God. Symbolically, they were saying, how long, you know, will we be raised up and be in God's kingdom? And they were told to rest a little season because they're going to have other brothers that are going to be killed. For no other reason than they believe God's word and are trying to obey God. And we've seen that happen, you know, even people that we don't consider Christian, even though they think they are, we know that many, many of them have been beheaded just recently. So they're not going to, the beast power, they're not going to know the difference. Anyone that claims to be Christian or even has a Bible will be in danger. Let's go down to verse 12. And I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake. The sun became black as sackcloth of hair. The moon became as blood. And the stars of heaven fell to the earth, even as a fig tree casts her untimely figs. Imagine, you know, the fruit from a fig tree or an apple tree in a windstorm, and they all being blown off, falling to the ground. The stars will be falling towards the earth. When she, like a fig tree, when she is shaken of a mighty wind. Verse 14. The heaven departed and the scroll, when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their place. The kings of the earth and the great men and the rich men, the chief captains and the mighty men, and every bondman and every free man. I don't think that leaves anybody, does it? Pretty well covers everybody, except maybe very few of God's servants. They hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains. They said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. From the wrath of Jesus Christ. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand? Who shall be able to stand when God's wrath comes? What is that time frame? You know, we know about the tribulation. And the first 2.5 years of the tribulation is Satan's wrath against God's people. That's what it is. The first 2.5 years is Satan's wrath. God is more or less hands off of the world affairs, even though he does intervene to protect his own, certain individuals, you know, in various nations. But otherwise, that first 2.5 years, God is pretty well saying, hands off. You know, you made the choice, you live with it, as I mentioned before. That's what he's doing in that first whole 2.5 years. Now, here we just read that now God's wrath is going to be unleashed on the earth, on the very people that were working for Satan to bring wrath against God's people. Now God is going to bring his wrath on those people. So there's a shift there. From Satan doing his thing, his power is virtually ended, and God's going to step in and do his thing. So that's when we're going to see the heavenly signs. And there's a couple of places in the Bible that tells us exactly when those heavenly signs will come. It'll come after the tribulation, but before the day of the Lord. You know, the last year of what we call the tribulation is the day of the Lord. So the heavenly signs comes in between that. It's a shift. A shift in power. God is finally going to intervene. That is the time the 144,000 will be sealed so that Satan has no power to destroy them. If they come to that point in time, Satan cannot hurt them anymore. Where are they when they're sealed? Remember, 2.5 years of the tribulation is over. Where are those people? They're scattered throughout the cities of Israel. Where is Israel? The United States, I think even Germany, certainly England, Ireland, a lot of those nations in Europe, most of Europe, as a matter of fact. That's where the 144,000 are when they're going to be sealed. That's where God sends his angel to find them, in those cities of Israel. He doesn't say go down to Petra in some cave and seal 144,000. They're not there. They're not there. They haven't been there. This is just basic. The Bible tells you that. It tells you where they are. It's not something that I made up. You know, if I had time, I'd read all of those verses. But if I had time to cover everything that's going to go on at the end time, you know, we'd be here for a few days. Finally, God's wrath begins to be poured out. Let's go to Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 5. And we'll start reading in verse 5. Thus saith the Lord God, this is Jerusalem. I have set it in the midst of the nations and countries that are round about her. And she hath changed my judgments into wickedness more than the nations, and my statutes more than the countries that are round about her. For they have refused my judgments and my statutes. They have not walked in them. As a matter of fact, most of Judah even rejected Jesus himself. Verse 12 of Ezekiel 5. And this is about, remember, this is about Jerusalem. A third part of you shall die with the pestilence and with famine. Shall they be consumed in the midst of you? So there is disease and starvation. And a third part shall fall by the sword about you, And I will scatter a third part to all the winds, and I will draw out a sword after them. And remember, the people in Judah at the end time, they're told, when you see the abomination of desolation, flee to the mountains. Well, they're going to be scattered. Verse 13. Thus shall my anger be accomplished. I will cause my fury to rest upon them, and I will be comforted. And they shall know that I, the Lord, have spoken it in my zeal when I have accomplished my fury in them. When I get through with them, they're going to know who I am. That's what God is saying. They'll know. There will be no doubt. Moreover, I will make you waste and a reproach among the nations that are round about you and the sight of all that pass by. What is the situation in Jerusalem right now? Do the nations around them just love them? God is carrying out His promises. It's not a strange thing. God will do what He says He will do. And He can use anyone He wants to. Whether they're dedicated to Him, or whether they're like old Nebuchadnezzar, or the king of Assyria, you know, just so proud. He can use them. He can use mighty nations. On the other hand, brethren, He can use you and I if we're dedicated enough, committed enough, if we're willing. Ezekiel chapter 7. Let's go to chapter 7. Verse 1. Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Also, you son of man, thus say the Lord God unto the land of Israel. Now, this is not Judah, this is Israel. Israel. The end is come upon the four corners of the land. Now is the end come upon you, and I will send mine anger upon you, and will judge you according to your ways, and will recompense upon you all your abominations. My eye shall not spare you, neither will I have pity, but I will recompense my ways upon you, and your abomination shall be in the midst of you, and you shall know that I am the Lord. Finally, everybody will know. Verse 8. Now I will shortly pour out my fury upon you and accomplish my anger upon you. Verse 9, my eye shall not spare, neither will I have pity. The last part of that verse, you shall know that I am the Lord that smites. You shall know. And this is not talking about the world in general. This is talking about Israel. Israel, the Western world, the so-called Christian nations that have gone astray, that have corrupted God's word, that they have decided, like was brought out in the sermonette, that, you know, 3 days is from Friday afternoon to Sunday morning, 3 days and three nights. I can't count that. I don't know what rabbits and eggs have to do with the resurrection of Jesus Christ either, but that's what we live with. Verse 11. Violence is risen up into a rod of wickedness. None of them shall remain. Verse 12. The time has come. The day draws near. Verse 13, last part. Neither shall my Neither shall any strengthen himself in the iniquity of his life. No matter how great we think we are, no matter how righteous we think we are, if we have any sin, ongoing sin, we won't be able to live with it. You know, a time is coming when sin will be no more. That's the good news. Today I'm talking about the bad news. But we also need to keep in mind that there is good news on the horizon. When God is through judging the world, there will be peace in the world. There will be cooperation instead of competition. People will work together, love one another. You know, it's going to be a fantastic time. The Bible tells us even beyond our capacity to understand how great and wonderful and beautiful it will be. I want to throw that in, even though I'm on the negative side today. Verse 14. They have blown the trumpet even to make all ready, but none goes to the battle. Has anybody ever thought about the difference in this nation today and how it was at the beginning of World War II? You know, at the beginning of World War II, baseball stars, movie stars making hundreds of thousands or $1 million a year, they went and they joined the army, whatever that was required of them. Some of them joined as privates, some of them as second lieutenants. They did whatever the government asked them to do. When the Vietnam War came along, what did the young men start doing? Well, a lot of them went to Canada, for one thing. I'm not going to fight that war. And a lot of them stayed in the United States and did a lot of protesting. The world has changed. It's changed dramatically. But he says, oh, they'll blow the trumpet, but nobody's going to go. Going to turn tail and run. God's not going to be with us. Verse 15. The sword is without, pestilence and the famine within. He that is in the field shall die with the sword, and he that is in the city, famine and pestilence shall devour him. They that escape of them shall escape and shall be on the mountains like doves of the valley, all of them mourning, every one for his iniquity. A little bit late, but people will begin to turn to God. All hands shall be feeble, and all knees shall be weak as water. They shall also gird themselves with sackcloth, and horror shall cover them. Shame shall be upon all faces, and baldness upon their heads. They shall cast their silver in the streets, and their gold shall be removed. Their silver and their gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord. Let's drop down to verse 23. I have to skip through here. Run out of time. Make a chain, for the land is full of bloody crimes. The city is full of violence. Wherefore, I will bring the worst of the heathen, and they shall possess their houses. I would not be surprised at all if the Muslim nations make some inroads in the United States and take over certain areas. I don't believe the United States will ever fall to them, but they will make inroads. There are certain areas in the United States today that if you go there, you better watch what you do and what you say, because they're not inhabited by Americans. I think I told the story before. I got a son-in-law that used to drive a Pepsi truck up in Michigan, and he went to this one party store that the face of the store, the front of the store, was toward the parking lot. But the big old broad side of the store was just a plain block wall, you know, no windows or nothing. And he had a big old sign painted on it with the American flag and owned by Americans. And one day my son-in-law went by there to deliver his Pepsi, and Sam's gone. He said, "So what happened to the sign out there?" He said, "Well, there's a couple of Muslims walked in here and said, 'Take that sign down, we'll kill your kids.' And they turned around and walked out." He said, "I painted over it." This was years ago. Years ago. Let's see, 23, I think I read that. Yeah. Verse 25, "Destruction cometh, and they shall seek peace, and there shall be none. Mischief shall come upon mischief, and rumor shall be upon rumor. Then shall they seek a vision of the prophet, but the law shall perish from the priest, and counsel from the ancients." That is a frightening thing itself. When the leadership of the churches are not teaching the law anymore, and we see some signs of that now. This is the day of political correctness. How long has it been since you've heard these things? How long? Today, we're supposed to speak smooth things, pleasant things, you know. Things are going great. We're the chosen people of God. Not all Christians, just their group, you know. Not those other groups out there. At best, they're Laodiceans. They may not even be Christians at all. But we, you know, we're doing great. We want to hear smooth things, politically correct things. Verse 27, "The king shall mourn, and the prince shall be clothed with desolation. I will do unto them after their way." Let's go to Matthew 24. Well, you may not want to turn. I'm just going to read one verse there. Verse 37, "But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be." And Luke 17:27, if you want to take a note. How was it in the days of Noah? Well, they did eat, they drank, they married. They married wives, they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. Another one you can make a note of if you don't want to turn there. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 3. "When they shall say peace and safety," and we've heard that lately. You know, I heard not too long ago on the news that we are more safe now than we have been in years. Oh, boy. "When they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes on them as travail upon a woman with child. They shall not escape." And, you know, sometimes that comes pretty sudden. You know, when travail comes upon a woman to give birth, or sometimes they do it in the back seat of a car, they don't quite make it to the hospital. It can come pretty sudden. Ezekiel 39. And we'll start reading in verse 1. "Therefore, you son of man, prophesy against Gog and say, Thus saith the Lord God, Behold, I am against you, O Gog." Now, this is right at the very end. This is the end of God's wrath. "I am against you, O Gog, the chief prince of Meshech," that's Moscow, and Tubal, Tbilisi, I believe it is a nation in Russia. And I will turn you back and leave you but a sixth part of you, and will cause you to come up from the north parts, and will bring you upon the mountains of Israel. You shall fall upon the mountains of Israel, you and all your bands, and the people that is with you. I will give you unto the ravenous birds of every sort, and to the beasts of the field to be devoured. Verse 7. So will I make my holy name known in the midst of my people Israel, and I will not let them pollute my holy name any more. The heathen shall know that I am the Lord, the Holy One of Israel. Behold, it is come. It is done, saith the Lord God. This is the day whereof I have spoken. This is it, he said. They that dwell in the cities of Israel shall go forth and shall set on fire and burn the weapons. They shall, the end of the verse, they shall burn them with fire 7 years after that last great battle when God takes over and the people from the east and the north come down against Israel. That's Gog and Magog. Only one out of six is going to be left. The armaments that they have, there will be enough wood and fuel to run the nation for 7 years. They won't have to cut down any trees or drill for oil anymore, because when those armies come, they will bring their fuel with them, and it will be left there for God's people, enough to keep us going for the first 7 years. Verse 10, they shall take no wood out of the field, neither cut down any tree out of the forest, for they shall burn the weapons with fire. They shall spoil those that spoil them, and rob those that rob them, saith the Lord God. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will give unto Gog a place there of graves in Israel, the valley of the passengers on the east of the sea, and it shall stop the noses of the passengers, the people who pass by. And there shall they bury Gog and all his multitude. It won't just be the Russians. It will be a whole consortium of nations that come with them. Verse 12, 7 months shall the house of Israel be burying of them to cleanse the land. 13, all the people of the land shall bury them. The whole nation will be busy for 7 months burying the dead. It says all the people will be working for 7 months to bury the dead and cleanse the land. Verse 14, they shall sever out men of continual employment passing through the land to bury with the passengers those that remain upon the face of the earth to cleanse it after the end of the 7 months. So there will be people that are permanently employed burying the dead even after the 7 months is over. You know, after 7 months, everybody won't be working at it, but some will. And the passengers, I think today we would probably say the tourists, the passengers that pass through the land, when any sees a man's bone, then shall he set up a sign by it till the buriers have buried it in the valley of Hamon Gog. Verse 16, thus they shall cleanse the land. So what are we to do about it? Let's go to Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 10. Verse 23. Hebrews 10, verse 23. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised. He's faithful to do the good and what we would consider the bad. He'll do them both. Let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, That's what we're doing today. Exhorting one another. And so much more as you see the day approaching. If we sin willfully after we have received the knowledge of truth, there remaineth no more sacrifice for sins, but a certain fearful looking for of judgment and fiery indignations which shall devour the adversaries. Did I get the right book on that? Is that Hebrews 10? I begin to think, you know, that is repeated in Revelations, and I begin to think I wrote down the wrong book. So, we are to watch. Luke 21, you just make a note of it. Watch you therefore, pray always, that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass, and to stand before the Son of Man. And in closing, that's not the end of the story. God is going to build a fantastic world that is so beautiful and so good, and people will be so happy and live together and help one another forever and ever and ever. So when we think about the terrible things that we see coming on us today and will come on us for a few years in the future, remember also that after that is over, we're going to have a wonderful life eternally if we continue to follow God's way.